you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
LAist Studios.
Hooray for Hollywood, that screwy ballyhooey Hollywood.
Welcome, everybody. This is Retake. I'm John Horn. They say many things about Hollywood, place where dreams are made and dreams are broken. But high above it all, there's the Hollywood sign. Originally, it was an ad to promote a housing development called Hollywoodland. The sign, built in 1923, is an icon unto itself, recognizable across the globe. It's also part of a new TV series called Iconic America. I'll be discussing it with its creators and participants, and later, keeping with that Hollywood vibe, my recommendations for great films celebrating or making fun of the movie business. But first, it's time for my weekly entertainment news chat with LAist 89.3 Morning Edition host, Suzanne Whatley.
Morning, John.
Good morning to you.
I know you want to talk about The Little Mermaid, that new Disney remake of its animated classic, and how Chinese state media have attacked the film for its casting of a black performer as Ariel. But first, you have some news about the Writers Guild of America strike, which is now 1 month old. What's the latest?
1 month old. Let's focus on that for a minute. I mean, there's no signs of negotiations resuming. You and I have talked for many months about the ridiculous amounts of money that Hollywood's top executives are paid by what I'll call sycophantic boards of directors. Mm-hmm. The worst offender, to my mind, David Zaslav, the head of Warner Brothers Discovery. He has pocketed almost $286 million over the past 2 years. Early today, I got up my calculator and did the math, and it worked out to Zaslav earning, I'm going to put air quotes around earning because that's not the right word, more than $500,000 each and every day over those 2 years. All the while, Warner's stock price has been in a catastrophic free fall, and Zaslav has been firing thousands of workers to save money. But this is the important part. Warner is a member of the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, which has told the Writers Guild of America it doesn't have enough money to pay screenwriters for what they are seeking.
And the Writers Guild of America is starting to make the same conclusion. Well, maybe they've been listening to some of our chats.
Oh, how could they not be? But the Writers Guild has been picketing at studio gates, and now they're going after the pay packages of the people who run those studios. The Guild started with two companies whose annual meetings are coming up. So WGA President Meredith Steam wrote to shareholders of both Netflix and Comcast, which is the parent of NBC Universal, asking them to vote against approving compensation for its leaders in upcoming shareholder meetings. The top executives at Comcast made $130 million last year, while the top Netflix executives pocketed $166 million. So Meredith's team wrote to Netflix, quote, "Shareholders should send a message to Netflix that if the company could afford to spend $166 million on executive compensation last year, it can afford to pay the estimated $68 million per year that writers are asking for in contract improvements." The Writers Guild estimated the cost of the new contract to Comcast at $34 million.
I'm speaking with our arts and entertainment reporter, John Horn. And shifting gears, John, the mostly live-action Little Mermaid remake of the 1989 animated classic opened over the weekend. How did that Disney offering do at the box office, and what's the controversy?
It did really well in domestic theaters. I think the highest, most optimistic projection was $120 million over the four-day Memorial Day weekend. It did very close to that, so a great opening domestically. China is the world's most important movie market outside of North America. The movie did a fraction of what it was expected to do there, just $2.5 million. And part of the reason why is that state media in China went after the film for Disney's casting of the black performer Halle Bailey as Ariel. And one newspaper, Global Times, said of that casting, it's lazy and irresponsible storytelling strategy. So I don't know how much the state media influenced moviegoers, but they didn't show up for Little Mermaid, which is really sad that a country would go after the casting of a black performer. Even the poster for Little Mermaid in China makes it look like she's blue, not even black. So there's progress for you.
And you've seen the movie. How is it?
It's pretty good. I mean, it is not a masterpiece, but it does fix some of the real problems in the original film. There are some lyrics in Kiss the Girl from the original. It don't take a word, not a single word, go on and kiss the girl. I guess the song could be retitled No Consent. And then there's a song from Ursula when she's kind of casting a spell on Ariel, where she tells Ariel that men up on the surface don't want somebody who's going to talk. They just want somebody who looks good and gets out of the way. So those lyrics are gone. It is a very diverse cast. There's some new songs, one of which is good, one of which by Lin-Manuel Miranda Scuttlebutt is not so good. I took my wife and her mom. We all had a good time.
Appreciate you dropping by this morning.
My pleasure. See you next week.
After the break, one of the most recognizable icons in all of Hollywood, and maybe the biggest too, the Hollywood sign.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
I didn't get invited to the birthday party, and you probably didn't either, but the Hollywood sign turned 100 years old this year, and it is being celebrated in an episode of the PBS series Iconic America, The Hollywood Sign. I moderated a screening of the documentary by PBS SoCal and KCET at the Directors Guild of America. I talked to actor-host Melissa Rivers, sociologist Nancy Wong Yoon, vintage LA creator Allison Martino, and the series producer Mauro Chermayeff. Here's some of that lively conversation.
Mauro, I want to ask you, when you start thinking about how you're going to tell the story of the Hollywood sign, you can tell many different stories. What were your creative decisions as you went along, and how much was it influenced by the people that you ended up talking to along the way?
Well, you always listen to the subjects when you find them, and your directions change. But the concept that we wanted to talk about, Hollywood light and dark, as we refer to it, was always there from the very beginning. We knew we wanted to talk about real estate and how the city had changed, because it wasn't initially a real estate venture and a real estate sign, but that it came to mean all these other things, but that all these other things, as Hollywood itself, aren't quite what they seem, was always in the conversation.
Allison, I want to ask you about that idea of state of mind and how it plays out in your life with people that you are dealing with, because it's very hard to define. As Kim Masters says early in the movie, like, Hollywood is not really, it's not a thing, it's not a place, but it is an idea. And I'm curious about how that idea plays itself out in your work.
Well, growing up here, it's sort of all I knew. I really identified with what Melissa said, is at the end of the day, you're sort of defined by your level of success. And I was lucky enough to get into the TV business pretty early out of school. And it was always about, what latest show are you working on? And what's next? You know, no matter how successful your show may have been, it was always about what you're doing next. So I really related to that. And there's just so much change for me as far as architecture goes too. But the Hollywood sign remains, right? Oh, and by the way, I brought a little bit of the Hollywood sign.
Oh, wow.
This is just a little piece of the Hollywood sign when it was, you know, when it was fixed up by Hugh Hefner and Alice Cooper also.
Oh, had a that's hand part, in, wait, that's in, part of the quiz.
Yeah,
that you
sorry.
Jumped the gun
oh,
here.
Oh, well.
spoiler, pretend
well,
you didn't
that's what
hear
I do.
That. Okay. But it was not just Hugh Hefner and Arnold Schwarzenegger who helped raise money or gave money for the restoration of the sign. Alice Cooper, you heard,
right.
but he gave it, you can't say anything, on behalf of a comedian, first, anybody have a guess? First name Groucho. Okay. There was an actor who also gave to the sign first name Gene. There you go. Gene Autry. Another singer, first name Andy. There you go. Alice Cooper, Gene Autry, Andy Williams on behalf of Groucho Marx.
And I believe they funded by the letters, did they not?
Oh, did they really?
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about the letters. Hollywood Land. Many years ago, maybe 20 plus, I was working at a magazine called Premiere Magazine. Anybody remember Premiere Magazine?
Yes.
I do.
Anyway, when I came to the magazine, I think in the late 90s, there was a column called Hollywood Land. And it was a collection of columns about the industry. And as soon as I got there, somebody from Hollywood Land called the magazine and said, you can't use that name. We didn't have very good lawyers, so we said, okay, and we changed it. I don't know to what. Hollywood Land somehow exists as an entity. Is it part of the sign trust? What is it now? Because there was somebody back in the 90s who was saying you can't use it. Is there an entity now that controls Hollywood Land or the Hollywood sign? Who do you have to talk to?
You have to talk to the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. And what are the rules?
Oh, cash. It's all about money in Hollywood. There's definitely a list of requirements and permissions and context and how you're going to, you know, what the story you're going to tell. I mean, we had the great good fortune, almost not knowing this when we made the decision, that we're coming to the 100th anniversary. Mm-hmm. So there was an excitement that PBS was going to give this real estate and tell this story. So we're probably pretty lucky because I think they can be quite picky.
Absolutely. when I was working at do you remember Mysteries and Scandals and True Hollywood Stories at E? So I was producing that, and every show that we opened with showed the Hollywood sign. But these were the stories of Fatty Arbuckle and Peg Entwistle. And it was okay to show it till one day we got a call from the Chamber of Commerce and said, that doesn't show Hollywood in a good light. And we had to pay a ghost agent. Who was he? A fee to show the Hollywood sign. And
it's called fair use. You didn't have good lawyers. There's a discussion about how Hollywood itself is portrayed in the movies and movies that kind of get it right and movies that don't. Are there some movies that come to mind from your experience about really capturing what it means to be in the city?
Well, I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood 37 times in the theater.
Okay, that's a lot.
I thought that really depicted the late 60s perfectly because I've seen it done really corny and really cheesy, kind of making characters out of people looking like they're wearing Halloween costumes. I'm not saying they're going for the Austin Powers look, but to me, production on that was another level. Having Quentin take back the streets and make them look exactly like they did in 1969, that is raised the bar entirely.
Nancy? I actually have something to say. I thought of that movie, but I was going to say that it did a horrible job. Uh-oh. Maybe not of depicting Hollywood.
And the Bruce Lee part,
but
yes.
But the Bruce Lee part where Bruce Lee fights... what is
Brad Pitt?
Brad Pitt, thank you. Who won?
Cliff Booth. You're the only person who's forgotten.
That's
Brad
right.
Pitt.
I have forgotten Brad Pitt. This is my.
We all should.
But he got his first Best Supporting Actor, and you know Shannon Lee, Bruce Lee's daughter, spoke out against the portrayal because Bruce Lee kind of lost or tied or whatever with Brad Pitt's character. And I remember I was actually watching it in theater and I said out loud, "That's not possible."
It's definitely not possible.
That was you. I was that.
Right. It resonated through all the theaters in the entire world. But I just felt like it was a reimagining, right? And I felt like they were building up Brad Pitt's character at the expense of an Asian American icon. Right? Why put him down? And it was really painful to watch. But with the Hollywood aside, I thought that was just a really
and much like Hollywood, it has a bit of a happy ending.
I was going to say that
it does have a good ending.
The movies that resonate for me are sort of bits and pieces, like in Swingers,
right?
And everybody has to take their own car. That's very L.A. Steve Martin's L.A. story,
right?
With the traffic and the signs talking to you. And obviously, I love all the movies like L.A. Confidential and all those. But for me, it's more of those little cultural bon mots, if you will, of like that scene when singers, everyone's taking their own car. That's L.A.
I think all of you watched, you've obviously seen the movie many times. All of you watched it tonight.
A good 500 or 600 times.
And I'm wondering, outside of The Sign itself, what you were reflecting on and watching the documentary about Hollywood writ large. Because The Sign, as the documentary makes clear, is both a physical thing and a conceptual thing. And I'm curious, what were your thoughts watching the documentary about Hollywood as an idea? I'll start with you because you're closest.
Lucky me. What I found, what I think I hung on to after watching this is the whole idea of co-opting the dream. Hollywood, Bollywood, and I never really sort of thought of that, but it's true. It's a dream. It's a notion. It's a hope. It's a something that's aspirational to people. It's really, you know, the fame and success and all the things that everyone believes that working in the entertainment business is, and then they become a part of it and become really disillusioned really fast that it is actually a business. But I think for me, that I'm going to walk away with is the idea of co-opting the word or part of the word to represent this dream.
Right. Nancy?
Well, for me, I think Hollywood and America, I think, just kind of synonymously with whiteness,
right?
If we look at the classic Hollywood, it is so uniform, right? Even though there were actually actors of color working at that time. And so I think my whole kind of research and life has been co-opting or reimagining Hollywood as inclusive, right? And that if Hollywood is to represent the American dream, the United States is diverse. And we need to think about how those images of Hollywood and the dream, you know, we need to kind of deconstruct that and interrogate it.
It has an incredible impact on how just one line of dialogue can be lodged into a consciousness in a horrible way. Allison, what about you?
Watching the beginning, I hope that people continue to go to the movies. I think that's, you know, when I see the theaters closing down, and I know we have Amazon and Netflix, and we all want to be home and watching TV and seeing the opening and seeing Netflix on the map and Amazon on the map, and I know it's a big TV business now, too, is I just hope that I grew up going to the movies. I love going to the movies. I love the idea of movies, and I just hope we all continue to go to the movies. It's nice to be in a theater with all of you right now.
Well, I think it was an important part of the story, too, was that we are... You know, it is a business that's changing. It's changing for the people who are in that business. It is becoming more diverse. That's really important. My daughter was Chinese, and it was really interesting when she watched the film for the first time. And she said, oh, my God, someone was said that to me when I was on the street the other day. They said, me love you long time. She said, I never knew what it was until I didn't know what they were saying. And she literally learned it in that moment watching you talk about it. And I thought, it's so critical that people understand the influence that movies and watching these idols and watching people on the screens or having these fantasies about what people's lives are like and what they're not. And the diversity and the change in the business is definitely painful for some people. But it's really critical, and it's not just critical in this movie business. It's critical across the universe.
I'm going to ask, as the filmmaker, what you went into thinking about The Sign and how those thoughts or preconceptions were changed in the making of the film.
I don't think my preconceptions were changed. I mean, I'm always fascinated that it's the one symbol that is the word and that had no intention to be that. You know, if you think about the Statue of Liberty and the gift from France, and you can watch all the other episodes and you'll find out all these other interesting stories. But this wasn't meant to be that. And that's sort of the Hollywood story. It's like a story that's created a story. And to me, that's part of this. So I think that, you know, I wasn't too surprised, but I don't think I understood how meaningful The Sign is to people.
I will say I was really struck by Brian Lord's story. Brian runs CIA, or I guess, you know, co-runs it. But the fact that he read the Sam Cohn profile in The New Yorker, but that he came to Hollywood for the same reason so many actors do, that he loved the idea of Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's a very successful agent, but that he was motivated just the way other people. It wasn't fame. It was this idea of this dream factory, I think, that brought him to town.
I mean, if we want to go deep on this, the concept of Hollywood is simply a construct of, you know, the dream, the this, fame, beauty, all these different things. And it's really just, again, a construct that was created by publicists at the studios. Right. So if we want to drill it down to its most shallow, shallow meaning, it's an ad. And it started out as an ad, and it's still an ad.
You can watch Iconic America now on PBS. After the break, more Hollywood storytelling, my recommendations for really good movies about the industry, both for better and for worse.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
With a handful of major shows ending, I heard about this series Succession coming to an end. Maybe you're wondering what you should watch this weekend. Well, in the theme of celebrating the town that makes the movies, here are some of my recommendations. You have to start with A Player, 1992's film by director Robert Altman, based on the novel of the same name by Michael Tolkien, who also wrote the screenplay. It is the best movie ever about Hollywood.
It's a TV star, and she goes on
like
safari to Africa.
You're talking about a TV star in a motion picture?
No, not a real TV star. It would be played by a movie star.
A movie star playing a television star.
Julia Roberts would be good. Dolly Parton would be good.
Right.
Dolly.
I like Goldie.
Goldie, okay.
Great,
because
we have a relationship, and that would be great. Goldie goes to Africa.
She becomes worshipped.
Well, she's found by this tribe.
Of small people. But then she has
she's found by this tribe and they worship her.
It's a kind of like a gods must be crazy, except the Coke bottle's now a television actress.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's Out of Africa meets Pretty Woman.
Then I'd recommend The Stuntman. It came out in 1980, directed by Richard Rush. The screenplay's by Rush and Lawrence Marcus, based on the novel by Paul Brodeur. Stars Peter O'Toole and a great performance by Steve Railsback.
Who had the audacity to put palm trees there? They will be in every shot. And what are palm trees doing waving around on a battlefield in Europe during the First World War? Answer them in that.
The Coen brothers have made a lot of great films. No Country for Old Men, probably my favorite, but their film about the movie business is 1991's Barton Fink. It stars John Turturro here with Tony Shalhoub.
I don't understand.
Jeff, he likes you. He's taken an interest. What the hell did you say to him?
I didn't say anything.
Well, he's taken an interest. That means he'll make your life hell, which I could care less about. But since I drew the short straw to supervise this turkey, he's going to be all over me, too. Fat ass son of a bitch called me yesterday to ask me how it's going. Don't worry, I covered for you. I told him you were making progress. We were all very excited. I told him it was great. Understand that? So now my ass is on the line.
This movie probably shouldn't have worked, but it does. 2008's Tropic Thunder, directed by Ben Stiller, who co-wrote it with Justin Theroux and Ethan Coen, not Ethan Coen, Ethan Coen, stars Ben Stiller, Jack Black, Tom Cruise, Matthew McConaughey, and I would argue the performance of his career, Robert Downey Jr.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it, Tug.
You are a huge star.
All right, but right now, you're like that kid on the playground, you know, the one who has lice that none of the other kids want to play with.
What do you mean?
No, I mean, we got to shave your head and get you back on the monkey bars, right?
What?
How'd the crying scene go?
Horrible. Lazarus started crying. I mean, he starts drooling and dribbling, and he wasn't even in the
script.
Whoa,
hey, stop right there.
All right, you got to buck up here, Tugboat.
Who cares how much more talented he may be than you?
If he cries,
you cry harder, man. Didn't your dog have, like, leukemia or something when you were a kid? I mean, think of that. Boom. End of story.
And 1999's Bowfinger, about the lengths that some people will go to try to get a movie made. It was written by Steve Martin, who stars opposite Eddie Murphy, directed by Frank Oz.
Damn it, Hal, I'm the biggest black action star in the world!
Kid.
Where's my Hasta La Vista, baby?
Well, what are you talking about?
My Hasta La Vista! Look, if Arnold Schwarzenegger is getting to say lines like that, you better make sure to Kit Ramsey has shit that's equally well written.
Look, the script has that moment.
When?
Yeah. You say, I enjoy meeting you, Cliff, then you push the guy right over the cliff.
That's too much for the audience to have to think about. They have to know that the guy's name is Cliff, and that he's on the cliff, and that a cliff and a cliff is the same. It's too cerebral. We're trying to make a movie here, not a film. Damn, you're supposed to be the agent, huh?
As always, thank you so much for listening to Retake. I'm John Horn. Retake is produced and engineered by Michael Cosentino, Monica Bushman, and Taylor Kaufman, who is also my session director. The editor is Suzanne Levy. Listeners like you help make Retake possible, so please donate now at elias.com/join, and thanks. Support for this podcast is made possible by Gordon and Donna Crawford, who believe that quality journalism makes Los Angeles a better place to live. Elias Studios operates within the homelands of the Gabrielino Tongva people. We recognize the painful history of displacement, settler colonialism, and erasure of the people, their language, and their sovereignty. Visit elias.com/land for more information. We encourage you to get curious about the land on which you live and work.
Hey, it's Brian, the host of How to LA, a podcast that is a love letter to Los Angeles. Independent movie theaters are having a glow-up moment.
Vidiots and Eagle Rock, amazing. We have our friends at the American Cinematheque. The Vista just reopened.
In our new series, Revival House, we'll take you inside these spots and share their history. Because movie history is LA history. Listen to Revival House on How to LA wherever you listen to podcasts.